All right, so you're back for another deep dive. Awesome. Let's jump right in. Today, we're going to unpack a case that's a real gem when it comes to understanding software patents and the whole world of joint infringement. We're talking about MuniAuction Inc. v. Thompson Corporation, a 2008 decision from the Federal Circuit. This case has a lot to teach us, especially if you're thinking about a future in patent law, which I know many of you are.
Definitely a good one to know. And you've got some interesting materials lined up for us to dig into, so I'm looking forward to this.
Absolutely. The goal here is to really get to the heart of MuniAuction. What are the key takeaways? What should someone like you, on your way to becoming a legal eagle, really grasp about this case?
Well, MuniAuction really hits on two super important areas of patent law. First, it digs into the concept of obviousness, especially for software patents after that big Supreme Court case, KSRV Teleflex. Can you really patent something that seems like just putting existing tech together in a predictable way?
Right. Like, is it really an invention if it's kind of obvious?
Exactly. And the second biggie is joint infringement. This is all about figuring out who's liable when you've got multiple parties using a patented invention. So you've got a system, maybe software, and different people or companies are interacting with it. Who's actually infringing? That can get pretty tricky. And to make it even more interesting, the Federal Circuit actually overturned a huge verdict, a $76 million verdict against Thompson in this case.
Whoa, okay, a $76 million reversal. That definitely has my attention. Can you give us a little background on the case? What was this tech all about, and why were they fighting over it?
Sure. So MuniAuction, they had this patent for an electronic auction system. Their big claim was that their system was special because it allowed people to use these online auctions just with their regular web browsers. Back then, you might have needed specific software for some systems. So MuniAuction was saying, hey, our browser-based access, that's the innovation. They sued Thompson, saying Thompson's bid comparity system was basically ripping off their patent.
Makes sense. So what happened at the trial?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. The jury sided with MuniAuction. They said, yeah, the patent isn't obvious, and Thompson, you're guilty of willful infringement. And they hit them hard with damages. Started at $38.4 million, but the court doubled it to, like we said, almost $77 million bucks. They even slapped a permanent injunction on Thompson, saying, stop using that bid comparity system, at least the way it is now. So big win for MuniAuction at first, right?
Huge. Okay, so Thompson must have had some strong arguments to take this all the way to the Federal Circuit. What were their main points? Where did they think the trial court messed up?
Thompson zeroed in on those two big issues we talked about, obviousness and joint infringement. First, they said, come on, MuniAuction's patent is obvious. It's just a bunch of existing technologies mashed together. They pointed to their own parody system, which was already out there, and the fact that everyone and their grandma was using web browsers at that point. It's not rocket science to put the two together, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. And what about the joint infringement part?
For that, Thompson basically said, look, our system needs the bidders, the actual users, to do certain things that are part of this patented method, like submitting their bids. We're not the ones doing those things directly. So it's a question of, can you really pin infringement on someone if they're not doing every single step themselves?
Interesting. Okay, so let's unpack that first legal hurdle, obviousness, especially after KSRV Teleflex. This case was a game changer, right?
Yeah, KSR in 2007 was a big deal. It really changed how courts looked at obviousness. Before, they used the strict teaching, suggestion, or motivation test. Like, was there something in those old patent documents specifically saying, hey, combine these things? But KSR broadened it out. The Supreme Court said, look, it can be obvious even if the prior art doesn't explicitly lay out the combination. If it solves a known problem in a predictable way, even using existing stuff, that might be enough to say it's obvious.
So it's not just about what's written down in those old patents. It's about what someone skilled in that area would think.
Exactly. Common sense comes into play. They asked, would a normal engineer in this field see this combination as an obvious step? That's a big shift. So how did the Federal Circuit use this in the MuniAuction case?
Yeah, let's get into that.
Well, they looked at MuniAuction's patent and said, okay, you're claiming it's inventive to make an online auction system work through a standard web browser. But the court pointed out that by that time, the internet was everywhere and web browsers were the standard way to get to online stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a well duh
Yeah.
moment, right? Like, of course you'd use a web browser.
Right. The court basically said that. They said, this is just using old stuff in the way it was meant to be used. It's predictable, not some crazy new invention. Everyone was pushing for online systems that worked easily with browsers. It was just common sense.
Makes sense. But MeanieAuction tried to argue that their success proved the patent wasn't obvious, right?
Yes. They used those secondary considerations like commercial success. They said, look, our system is popular. People love it. That means it can't be obvious, right? Sometimes those things like commercial success or a long-felt need that this invention solves can be evidence that it's not obvious.
So what did the Federal Circuit say about that?
They weren't buying it. The court said, hold on. You haven't shown us a direct link between your success and that specific part of the patent that you say is inventive, the browser access. Just because your auction system was popular doesn't automatically mean it's because you made it work with a web browser. Maybe it was your marketing or other features, who knows? You've got to show the success is because of that unique thing in your patent.
Ah, okay. That's a subtle but super important point. So they weren't convinced by the whole commercial success argument, but then there's the joint infringement issue, which seems even trickier. Can you break that down for us?
Okay, so the basic idea with direct infringement of a method patent is that one party has to do all the steps in the patent. But when you have multiple parties involved, things get messy. That's where joint infringement comes in.
Right. So like in this case, you've got Thompson providing the platform and the users doing the bidding. That's multiple parties right there.
Exactly. And in MuniAuction, the Federal Circuit doubled down on what's called the single entity rule. They relied on this earlier case, BMC Resources, which basically says that to nail someone for direct infringement when you've got multiple parties doing stuff, the accused infringer has to be the mastermind behind it all. They need to control or direct the actions of the others.
Interesting. So how did Thompson use that to defend themselves?
They said, look, we set up the system, but the bidders, those users, they're the ones actually submitting the bids, which is a step in MuniAuction's patent. Thompson wasn't doing that directly. The users were. The court agreed, saying that Thompson and the bidders were just in an arm's-length cooperation kind of situation. Thompson provided the playground and the rules, and the bidders played the game. But Thompson didn't have this super strong control over them to be liable for everything the bidders did.
So even though Thompson created the whole system and gave instructions, that wasn't enough to say they controlled every single thing the bidders did.
Nope. The court was clear about that. They said, just giving instructions, like a user manual or some online help, doesn't mean you have legal control over someone else's actions. You need actual legal authority to tell them what to do. They emphasized that there wasn't this agency relationship, no contract forcing the bidders to do specific things, nothing like that. The bidders were doing their own thing on the platform.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this all played out. So the Federal Circuit agreed with Thompson on both of their big arguments. They said the patent was obvious based on KSR, and that Thompson wasn't liable for direct infringement because they didn't have that tight control over the bidders.
Right. They basically said this patent shouldn't have been granted in the first place, and even if it was okay, Thompson didn't infringe anyway. Big win for Thompson.
Wow. A complete 180 from that initial $76 million verdict. So, stepping back, what does MuniAuction tell us about patent law in general? Especially when we're talking about software and internet stuff, which is so huge now.
Well, it really highlights how important the KSR obviousness standard is, especially when you're dealing with software patents. Software is often about combining existing stuff in new ways. MuniAuction made it clear that just putting familiar pieces together, even in a way that's commercially successful, probably won't cut it anymore. You have to show that your invention is more than just common sense. This makes it harder to get software patents and maybe even harder to enforce them.
And on the joint infringement side?
MuniAuction was a big reinforcement of that single entity rule, and it gave more guidance on what control or direction actually means. It's not enough to just say, hey, they're using my system, so they're infringing. You have to prove that the accused infringer is really calling the shots, controlling all the essential parts of the patented process. This matters a lot for businesses that rely on users interacting with their systems or those platforms where things are happening in a decentralized way.
It makes me think about those ride-sharing apps, Uber and Lyft. Imagine if someone had a patent on a method for connecting riders and drivers. It's the drivers who are actually doing the driving, the key part of that method, right?
Right.
But based on MuniAuction, it sounds like it'd be really hard for, say, Uber to sue a competitor just because the competitor's drivers are also doing that driving part. Unless Uber could somehow prove that the competitor was specifically controlling how their drivers operate, every little detail.
That's a great example. MuniAuction really complicates things for patents that rely on those multi-party actions.
This has been super helpful. So for those listening, just to recap, what are the big takeaways from UniAuction? What should we burn into our legal brains?
Two main things. First, if you're trying to patent something, especially software that combines existing technologies, you've really got to show that it's not just an obvious step. There has to be something truly inventive there. Remember KSR, the bar is higher now. Second, if your patent involves multiple people or entities doing different things and you're trying to prove infringement, you're going to need to show that the accused infringer is in control of all those essential actions. It's not enough for them to just be involved in some way.
Exactly. Those are the biggies. Any other parting thoughts?
Well, UniAuction really laid the groundwork for some major Supreme Court decisions later on, like Alice Corp v. CLS Bank, which also dealt with obviousness and software patents. That might be worth a deep dive sometime, too. But for now, as you keep learning about patent law, think about how UniAuction changes things. How should you write patents differently? How should companies think about protecting their inventions, especially in the tech world where things move so fast?
Great point. And one last question to really get you thinking. Given what we've learned from UniAuction, what are the big things to watch out for when you're writing a patent for something that involves users interacting with the invention or something that combines existing technologies in a way that seems obvious, even if it's really useful?
Think about that.
That's it for today's deep dive. Thanks for listening.
Until next time.